Hello, this is Ethan Nadelman. I'm Executive Director of the Drug Policy Alliance, and if you're listening now, thank you for joining me with the next in the DPA series of live audio chats. Today we have a special treat. We've been having a meeting of all the Drug Policy Alliance senior staff in New York for the last few days, which gives a nice opportunity to get a bunch of my colleagues on the phone with us to talk about what's new, what's hot in drug policy, and more specifically, what has Drug Policy Alliance been doing all around the country. Now, if you have a question, you're listening to this, and you have a question you want to ask, you'll see on your screen a place to put in your email address, and then to mail, and then to send the question over to me. So please go ahead and do that if there's anything you'd like us to deal with. The thing that's been most in the news, obviously, today has been the Rockefeller drug laws. You may have seen in the newspaper, front page of the New York Times today, that for the first time in 30 years, a major step forward was taken on Rockefeller reform, that the Senate and the Assembly in New York and Pataki, Governor Pataki giving his approval, said that they're ready to pass or that they're about to pass major sentencing reform. Now, Drug Policy Alliance has been at the forefront, behind, all around this coalition, the Real Reform Coalition for Rockefeller Reform, for almost 10 years now. We regard what's happened last night as a major, major breakthrough. On the other hand, it also has to be said that this represents only a few small steps forward towards our ultimate objective of ultimately repealing the Rockefeller drug laws. You know, a lot of us feared that if we settled for the kind of deal that was offered yesterday, that we would lose a lot of momentum and that never be able to readdress this issue in Albany for years to come. But we made a calculation this year that if it was possible to attain significant sentencing reform, reduction in the sentences that people in New York receive for drug offenses, without the Republicans and the governor including any poison pills, any new enhancements to penalties, that we would take that deal, even though it did not include increasing judicial discretion, even though it did not include expanded drug treatment, even though it did not include retroactivity for many of the people sitting behind bars. That's the deal we managed to get. We're going to be back next year. We've made a rock-hard commitment that we are not going to stop working on this stuff until we have real reform in the Rockefeller drug laws. So if you have any questions about that, just look around our website. You'll see much more. And if my colleague Michael Blaine, who's been the point person on all of this, is able to get into the office for a few minutes later on, we'll ask him about it. But I also want to turn right now to one of the other issues that was on the front page of the newspapers just last week. That was the medical marijuana case that went to the Supreme Court involving Angel Raich and another medical marijuana patient, where Drug Policy Alliance was fairly deeply involved in that case. Now, we're very lucky to have on the phone today Daniel Abrahamson. Daniel's been the director of our Office of Legal Affairs, which is based in Oakland for about 7 or 8 years now. He was a pioneer in the case of Conant v. McCaffrey, where we fought the federal government for 7 years to defend the First Amendment rights of patients and doctors to talk about medical marijuana. Dan, could you bring us up to date on what you think's happening with this Raich case in the Supreme Court, what it's about, and what you think's likely to happen?
Absolutely, Ethan, and thank you for having me this evening. The Raich case involves two ill women in California who use medical marijuana under their physician's recommendation to treat their serious illnesses. And in the case of Angel Raich, she has somebody, a caregiver, who grows the marijuana for her. And then in the case of Diane Monson, the other plaintiff in the case, she grows her own. And in Diane's case, the DEA raided her backyard garden and took her marijuana away from her. And so Diane and Angel brought suit against the federal government, brought suit against the DEA, asking a federal judge to issue an order prohibiting the federal police from taking away their marijuana. And their argument was pretty simple. It was that the federal government lacks the police power to take away individual patients' medical marijuana because those patients are not using marijuana in a way that affects interstate commerce. And interstate commerce is the hook that the federal government needs to exercise police power. They said no commerce taking place, federal government has to stay out of our yards, stay out of our homes. That case, they won favorable decision in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, which covers California and various other states on the West Coast. And that decision was appealed by Ashcroft's Justice Department to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral argument last Monday on the case. And so the case, as presented to the court, raises central issues of federal police powers vis-a-vis the states and, within the states, sick people who need to use medical marijuana. DPA has been involved from the inception of this case. We've helped fund the lawyers who are litigating the case. We helped produce some of their briefs to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Alliance filed its own Friend of the Court brief with the Supreme Court, making some very strong constitutional arguments that were slightly different from what the parties to the case made. Now, what we know from last week's oral arguments, because one of the DPA lawyers was in the court when this was being argued, was that many of the justices, unfortunately, were not very receptive to the Interstate Commerce Clause argument that Angel Raich was making. The justices were concerned that even though there might not be any commerce occurring when a single patient like Angel Raich grows and uses medical marijuana, the justices seemed concerned that there might be as many as 100,000 medical marijuana patients in California doing exactly as Angel Raich is doing, and that combined collectively, when you have 100,000 patients growing and using medical marijuana, there would be some impact on commerce with respect to marijuana. I think it's going to be an interesting decision that the court is going to come to and how they sort of figure out the Commerce Clause situation. But when you're trying to count heads, and it's always like a little bit like reading tea leaves with the Supreme Court. You can't really tell exactly from how their questions went how they're going to vote. But many commentators have come away from the oral argument pessimistic that the court is going to allow the Ninth Circuit decision to be upheld. Namely, it seems likely.
Let me ask you this. I mean, it sounds from you and others that we're sort of lucky that the case has gotten as far as it has, and that we're sort of pessimistic about the Supreme Court coming down the way we'd like. Now, the question is, what are the implications of a negative Supreme Court decision for the 10 or 12 states which have now made marijuana legal for medical purposes, or for other states that are considering it?
And that's the critical question, and the answer is actually quite simple. That the decision in the Raich case really has no implication for the states that have already passed medical marijuana or the states that are poised or even just thinking about passing future medical marijuana
laws. And why is that?
And that's because the Raich case doesn't change the current status quo. When the states that have got medical marijuana laws pass their laws, the federal government already had the power to come in and take away people's medical marijuana if the federal police wanted to do that. And so what these state laws are doing is they're giving state law protections to patients, saying under state law, these patients are protected. The states have never tried to say that they're protected under federal law. And so if the Raich case, for some reason, loses, what will go on is you'll continue to have this rather uneasy balance exist, where states can protect people under their state laws from state law enforcement, messing with patients who need their medical marijuana, but the feds will remain free to do so. And what we've seen, and this is really important, what we've seen since 1996 when the first medical marijuana laws were passed, is we've seen, you know, perhaps 100,000 patients across the country now using medical marijuana, and we've seen the federal government interfere in only a handful of cases of genuine patients generally using medical marijuana to treat their illnesses. And so we've seen the federal government, by and large, stay out of the issue of medical marijuana.
Yeah, let me ask you this, without getting too technical about it, I mean, a case that we've been even more deeply involved in has involved Valerie and Mike Corral in Santa Cruz, the WAM case. I mean, that's a case which you can describe DPA's involvement briefly, but what might be the implications of this Raich decision for the WAM case?
The WAM case is very much like the Raich case. Instead of involving one patient growing their own medical marijuana, the WAM case involved a collective of patients in Santa Cruz, California, who grow for one another. And so you've got a collective of 100 or so patients who grow for one another, and DPA brought suit on behalf of WAM and on behalf of the city of Santa Cruz against the federal government, saying, keep the federal cops out of this collective garden. And it raised many of the same arguments, some slightly different arguments in the Raich case. But by and large, it's looking like that if the Raich case goes down, the WAM case might also be in trouble because we've got a favorable decision there on the same grounds that the Raich case was decided on. There'll still be maybe some more arguments that we can raise to protect the WAM patients, But again, regardless of how the Raich case is decided and regardless of how the WAM case is decided, states will remain free to pass medical marijuana laws and enforce the medical marijuana laws they may already have on their books. The only question will be, to what extent will the federal government feel that they need to focus their police powers away from, for example, the war on terror, and focus on medical marijuana patients. And
right, well,
it's not clear.
You know, I'll tell you, I mean, many of our listeners may know that Drug Policy Alliance, or our predecessor organizations, were deeply involved, oftentimes in initiating or else carrying to victory most of the medical marijuana laws that are now in effect around the country. Obviously, starting with Prop 215 in California in 1996, and then in Alaska and Oregon, Washington State, Colorado, Nevada, and Maine, and then providing a helping hand in D.C., and also being involved in state legislation in Hawaii, and then of course our sister organization, Marijuana Policy Project, had a recent victory in Montana and earlier this year in Vermont. Now we all have plans to move into some other states as well. We're looking at Alabama, we're looking at Connecticut, we're looking at Wisconsin, where Drug Policy Alliance will be advancing both treatment instead of incarceration legislation and sentencing reform legislation, as well as medical marijuana. Now, what's remarkable, in all three of those states, Wisconsin, Connecticut, and Alabama, although the Democrats are typically providing most of the votes and much of the leadership, the lead Republican sponsor or co-sponsor in all three states is somebody who has a personal experience with MS or with cancer. Very interesting the way this issue strikes home, not just among the electorate, but even among state legislators. Now, one of the states where we've worked a lot on medical marijuana over the years has been New Mexico. Obviously, Gary Johnson, when he was governor in his second term, you know, stunned the nation by calling for marijuana to be legalized and then becoming the leading proponent of harm reduction. We worked on medical marijuana there and became within a hair's breadth just a few years ago passing medical marijuana legislation. Now, we're lucky to have on the phone right now on the web chat Rena Schapansky, who directs our New Mexico office, who's been on site for a number of months. Rena, what can you tell us about the prospects for this coming year, both on medical marijuana and treatment instead of incarceration?
Well, Ethan, we're very excited to have the only physician in the legislature sponsoring our medical marijuana bill. And he's also a Republican. His name is Senator Steve Comedina. And he really approaches the issue from a medical perspective. And I think that's going to frame the debate this year, and that's exactly what we're working on, is posing those medical arguments and that this is a legitimate medical intervention.
Now, what about sponsorship, likely people to lead with this and such?
Well, you know, we've got the senator on board. We're looking for a broad bipartisan coalition of sponsors and co-sponsors on this bill because, as we know from other states, this is not a partisan issue.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the governor has been a little bit of a disappointment. He certainly has not been as exciting as Governor Johnson was to work with. But, you know, we're still committed to working with him, and we hope that he'll do the right thing. You know, 80% of New Mexicans support this bill. I hear weekly from patients who call me and say that they desperately need access to this medication. So, you know, I think that we'll continue to work with him, and he in the past has said that he would sign the bill if it came to his desk. Now, I'm hoping that he'll be a little bit more active this year and let legislators know that he actually would like to see it on his desk.
Yeah, it's an interesting issue. You know, you saw the candidates running that John Kerry actually did embrace medical marijuana a bit tentatively, but he did embrace it during the election. One would think that this issue would work for people, and given, you know, Governor Richardson's supposed presidential aspirations, you know, sometimes there seems to be a tendency to kind of step back and be a little afraid of getting into it, yet we see 70 to 80% even in the South saying that they believe marijuana should be legal for medical purposes. Now, for our listeners, I just want to say, if you have any questions, please do send them in. I think you can hit that button on the right of your screen, put your email address, and send in a question. And also, if you're not yet a member of Drug Policy Alliance, please do join us. We have about 25,000 members right now who have made small contributions. We are a membership and national organization. We're trying to build ourselves into a powerful national advocacy organization, and your support is absolutely crucial. One point of these web chats is to interject a little fundraising pitch to all of you, but we really, really do need your support. I assume that if you're taking the time to listen to this, that this must be an issue you care about, so please, please do help us. Now, I want to turn to another state, New Jersey. New Jersey has been absolutely stunning in terms of how bad its drug policies have been over the last 10 or 20 years. It was the only state in the country a few years ago where more than 50% of all new prison inmates were there on a drug charge. It's been one of the only states with no clean